Get ready for Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen, brought to you by Amstar Mortgage Network and MLS number 148016. Stay tuned as Randy McMullen interviews realtors, credit specialists, closing attorneys, appraisers, insurance agents, home stagers, and others to prepare you for getting a mortgage and buying or selling a home. For more information, visit AmstarLoans.com. And now, your host for Keeping It Real, Randy McMullen.
So Randy McMullen, there are, I don't know how many mortgage companies are out there in Metro Atlanta right now. It seems like when rates are low, they come out of the woodwork, and then when the rates get high, I don't know where they go.
You can't find them.
You can't find them.
There are probably 5,000 people in, you know, Metro Atlanta area in the mortgage industry.
So how do you know you have a very successful company, Amstar Mortgage, to say the least? It's been successful. How do you stand above the fray?
It's really interesting. When I got into the industry, I thought it was going to be probably more challenging than it turned out to be. But we really built our business on three pretty basic principles. The one principle that most mortgage companies don't want to talk about is price, because everybody will tell you, you don't want to compete on price. You can't always be the lowest guy in the market. And that's really true. Nobody can always be the lowest person in the market. But one of the advantages that we have as a broker is that I get to shop different lenders from all over the country. And literally, I've probably shopped in 10 years over 150 different lenders, and I get to look at their rates. So at any point in time, I can whittle that number of 150 down to really about 12 lenders that we work with now. And I work with those lenders because they had some of the most aggressive rates in the country. And so it may be lender A today with the best rates, but tomorrow it might end up being lender B with the best rates. But we're flexible. We can go whichever way, you know, we can find the best rates for the customer.
That's why it's important that you have so many sources to go to. You know, I always wondered, and I'm not going to mention any particular bank. I'm just talking about banks in general, you know. Mm-hmm. You go in there and over at a desk inside the branch, let's say there's some nice young man or young lady that handles the mortgage, you know, a loan officer, I guess they call them. Mm-hmm. And it's very tempting, I think, for a lot of people to use that person because, well, they're with the bank. You know, we have this idea that if it's the bank, somehow it's more legitimate than the rest of us.
It is. A lot of people will follow the path of least resistance, as you kind of mentioned that. It's kind of funny. I had a phone call back, probably going back 5 or 6 years ago now, but a client called me and he said, I want to speak to Randy McMullen. I said, this is he, because I was told that I had to give you a call for my mortgage. And he goes, I want to tell you up front that I deal with this particular bank, and I'm actually sitting in their parking lot right now.
Wow.
I just came out of that bank, and they gave me a quote, but I wanted to give you a quick call just to see what your quote is. And so I said, that's fine. He says, it turns out I happen to be a correspondent with that particular bank. I can do your loan through the same bank that you're sitting in, and here's what I can do it for. Here's the rate, and here's the cost. Well, he kind of took back for a second and said, well, that's $500 lower than the quote that I got going directly to the bank. So how is it possible that you could be at have a lower cost going to the exact same bank when I'm a customer there and I walk in the door? I said, it's really pretty simple. I said, if you're sitting in the parking lot, you're looking at the building, is it a nice four-sided brick building? Yeah. Well, do they have a nice piece of real estate? Well, yeah, it's a nice location. How many vice presidents do you think you saw on the inside there? But drive-through windows, they got drive-through windows. He goes, yeah, I kind of see where you're going. Banks have a lot of overhead that, as a broker, we don't have.
But this guy thought going to the bank directly,
was the direct source.
Wholesale, you know?
Well, the reality is he gets rates at retail when you go to the bank. We get rates at wholesale when we go as a lender, as a broker. So when I add our cost of doing business compared to the bank's cost of doing business, per transaction, we're just usually a lot lower than the bank.
When somebody goes to the bank, we'll go into something else, you know, but when they go to the bank, mm-hmm. and they meet this nice young loan officer, mm-hmm. does that nice young loan officer have as many sources of money as Randy McMullen does? You mentioned you got like 12 sources.
Right.
That's a lot of sources. I mean, that's just your core. Do they have as many different sources, or is it just basically them?
Here's our rate. I hope you like it. They have one source. They typically, if you're going to one of the banks, they're going to offer the rates that they have. That's the only program they have. It's also the only set of underwriting guidelines that they have. So if they have a particular guideline that maybe some other lenders don't have, you're going to be subjected to that. And in some cases, if we do enough you know, homework up front and get your particular situation, we're going to know which bank to take you to because of your particular situation.
Is that one of the first questions a person asks, by the way, when they call Amstar Mortgage, is what's the rate? You know, before they ask anything else, so they say, you know, what's it going to cost me?
Different customers will come in with different things. Some people come in, the first thing they want is, hey, what's your rate and what's my closing cost? Some people will come in, and I think most people today, the industry and the market itself has changed so dramatically over the last few years. People are aware that this process has become much more complicated, and people know that there's a lot more to it than there used to be. So I think today what people are looking for is, look, I want a really competitive rate, but I want somebody who's going to get the loan closed on time, who's going to answer my questions, and, you know, kind of leading into something else, which is, what's one of the other things besides price that we do is service. And I have a lot of clients that they work, they're busy between 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. The best time for them to talk about their loan is on the weekday at 6 o'clock or 6:30 or 7 o'clock at night. Whereas if you try to call a bank, they're pretty much going to be closed. Mm-hmm. If you call my office, you may get me. If you don't, you can leave a message. I'll probably call you back that night. And if it's somebody that we're working with, you'll have my cell phone so that you can call me Thursday at 7 o'clock. You can call me Saturday at 11 o'clock in the morning. Really, anytime you want. It's more of a personal one-on-one type of relationship.
Could I meet you at a Starbucks or something if I wanted to?
You could absolutely
meet
me at a Starbucks.
My house or your house, whatever.
I'll come to your house. We can meet at a Starbucks. You know, it is about, for us, making the process as simple as possible. And that means meeting you on your terms in a location that's convenient with you, and then letting you know up front what's going to be involved in that process. So many times we hear stories about, you know, people get into the process and then 3 days before closing, they're being told, oh, we need updated pay stubs, we need more bank statements, we need all this different information. We just tell people like it is up front. Here's how the process works. Here's what you're going to need. And from that point, it can make the back end of the process just so, so much easier.
No surprises.
No surprises.
No, I don't like surprises. I'm one of those, you know, I'd hate to buy a home, go to the closing and find out this, that, and the other thing's wrong.
Well, it's not just the surprises at closing. That's one. But maybe even what's worse is 3 or 4 days before closing, when you're all excited and you get that, oh, by the way, we've got to have these extra documents to get your loan approved, that can really change your perspective about the whole process, because now you've got all this last-minute stress about getting approved because you weren't told some information up front. And so it's surprises really before closing and at closing that we try to avoid.
You know, Randy, I've met you a few times. I don't know you real well. One of the things that I notice about you, though, and tell me if I'm wrong, you seem to be very well organized.
Organization is absolutely critical in this
industry. Am I right, though?
Organization is probably our forte. I used to teach organization for a Fortune 500 company, and we taught people about how to set files up and do follow-up types of things. It is, because, again, there's just so much information to collect, it's all about organization. There's two big things. It's about organization, but the other thing that's really important for us is communication. People have to be able to, have to know what's going on and get regular updates. You want to know, you know, at least probably once a week what's going on with your loan. We have some files where I do a lot of email. I tell people up front, you're going to get a lot of messages from me. I want to keep you in the loop. The average file for me has over 240 emails between application and closing. Now, those may not all be to the customer. Some are to the attorney, to the real estate agent, but the customer is going to have a lot of information back and forth during the process so they know what's going on.
In black and white.
Yeah, they got to see it in writing.
Because one thing I don't like, because I've been in sales for a long time, I don't like when somebody says, you know, you told me, or, you know, I told you that. Don't give me that, what you told me and what I told you. I tell people right up front, I'm going to put everything down in writing, okay? Anything that's not there in writing, I'm not going to even consider. Because I want to be able to document what's going on. You know that in your business, I mean, that kind of a remark, you know, you told me, you said, I told you, can be very destructive.
If somebody's telling you that I told you this and you don't have a record of it, that's not a good situation. For us, it's pretty simple in that when we start the process, we provide people what's called a fee worksheet, Most people have heard of a good faith estimate, and that's what they're kind of, oh, I need a good faith estimate. We go a step further. The good faith estimate honestly confuses about 95% of the people that get it, because so many things are lumped together, and you see this giant number, but you don't know how that number got to be that number. We provide people what's called a fees worksheet, which is itemization. Here's every single item, line by line, that you're going to see when you get to closing.
Is RESPA still around?
Yes, it is.
Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act.
Protection Act.
It's been around for a long time.
It has been.
Does that do what you just said?
RESPA has some controls over the good faith estimate, and they have really done some good things and some maybe not so good things in redesigning the good faith estimate. It was a really nice one-page document, and then they decided they would, quote, simplify that document, and so now it's become a longer document. The good faith estimate.
The simplified document is longer.
Yes. They took a one-page good faith estimate and a one-page truth in lending disclosure and simplified those into only 5 pages. And unfortunately, they're going to be simplifying it again next year into 7 pages.
See, I think all that means that the person you deal with your mortgages, that makes them even more important, this person, this human being that you're dealing with.
You have to have somebody that can walk you. You know, when you're closing on a home, there needs to be a comfort level that you're getting what you were told you were going to get. Mm. And, you know, people tell us they don't like surprises at closing, but if you can imagine our position, probably no one hates surprises at closing worse than us, because we take each loan personal. It's not just, you're not a number. These are our clients, and our clients come back to us on a repeat basis. So we don't like any surprises. So we go overboard to make sure that you know, everything is as it was told. I've got a few closings coming up in the next couple of days, and I've really already reviewed the closing settlement statement with my clients. I go line by line over the closing settlement statement, and I compare it to that original estimate that we did so they can see, look, this is what we told you was going to be. This is what it is. And in most cases, we're dollar for dollar.
All right, we're up against a break now. Folks, you're listening to Keeping It Real. Keeping It Real, I'm Jeff Davis with our host, Randy McMullen of Amstar Mortgage. Randy, when we come back, and I want you to think about this. Don't answer now, but I want you to think about this. My wife and I refinanced our mortgage about a year and a half ago. And everything went great. We worked with a lovely guy. And the closing, I guess you'll call it, was at an attorney's office. Uh-huh. She did a very good job. But there was a stack of paperwork this high, literally. And how far are my fingers apart?
That's about eight inches of paperwork.
Okay, and my wife started to get a little upset about this because, you know, we don't even know what we're signing, you know, because she happens to be that way a little bit. I know the guy involved, so, and I trust him, and I know it, but I can't see anybody reading all of that stuff, you know, a consumer reading all that. I want to ask you about that when we come back.
Okay.
Here on Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen from Amstar Mortgage.
And now, back to Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen of Amstar Mortgage Network. Visit AmstarLoans.com.
I'm Jeff Davis with our host, Randy McMullen from Amstar Mortgage. Randy, I'm going to re-ask the question that I asked you a moment ago in case somebody just tuned in now and didn't
hear it.
When my wife and I refinanced our mortgage about a year and a half ago, it went very well. We were dealing with a very lovely person that we know to do the refi. And there was literally a good 8 inches of paper, a stack of paper for us to sign. Okay, the attorney handled that part. And they were all very nice and everything went smoothly, but my wife started to get upset because she kind of whispered to me, she said, you don't even know what you're signing. Here you are signing all this stuff. You don't know what you're signing. How can people read everything? They can. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm just going to take a guesstimate at this, but I would bet that 0.5%, maybe 1 in 20, it's probably a lot less than that. It's probably closer to maybe 1 in 100 people actually read those documents before closing. So we can make those documents available to people to read, and it's kind of funny. Because I can look back over the years and tell you that of the people that read the documents, I can tell you what they do for a living. Want to guess what they do for a living?
What?
They're attorneys. They want to read everything, and so they'll get the documents before closing. Normally, what an attorney is going to do for you at closing, and this is, you know, this is something you learn in the very beginning when you're, you know, kind of getting into the business world. One of the most important things for anybody with a business is trust. You really got to trust the people that you're going into business with. The attorney is going to go over these documents with you, and he's going to look at this one-page document. He's going to sum up what this page, this document means in one sentence. Here, this just says, you're in Georgia. You're in a non-judicial foreclosure state, which simply means that if you don't make your payments and they want to take your house back, they don't have to take you to court to take the house back. That's right. A standard form. Everybody in Georgia signs it. Now, that document's several pages long. He condenses it down into about a 30-second statement.
Mm. Have you ever had a situation where your client wants to read everything at the closing?
It's
and
actually,
maybe they start off that way for the first few minutes, and then they kind of start compromising a little.
You know, anybody who's ever wanted to read those documents has already told us, I want the documents a day early so I can read them before I get to closing. So we pretty much know that up front. We can get them those documents up front to read. The attorney will tell them if they want to read the documents. If they get to a closing, it's kind of an attorney thing, but they'll tell them if they want to go to do the closing, then what they'll do is they'll put them off in a side room, give them all the documents, and they'll check back with them in about 4 hours. And if they're ready, then they'll go back and do the closing.
That's how long it's going to take to
read. It will take them 4 hours, at least 4 hours, to go back and read all those documents.
There's also another thing, too, and this, you know, my wife, there was a stack of checks to sign. And the attorney said, well, this check is for this, this check is for that, this check's for the other thing. They all seem to make sense to me. You know, one's like a per diem thing because, this isn't the first of the month, this is the eighth of the month, or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
You know. It can be a little bit unsettling to people who don't feel that they're well prepared for this kind of thing because they're signing a lot of checks. And it's easy to start thinking, gee, you know, maybe I didn't get as good a deal as I should have gotten, you know?
Yeah, Jeff, what they should normally do in a refinance or a purchase transaction is they really should just be getting one check from you. Now, those regulations have also changed over the last couple of years. There's a new regulation in Georgia called a good funds requirement. And attorneys aren't allowed to take personal checks like they used to. In fact, they can't even take cashier's checks anymore for amounts over $5,000. If you're buying a house bringing over $5,000 to closing, you have to wire transfer the money to the attorney's office so that there are good funds at the time of closing.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So if in terms of writing multiple checks, typically what you want to have happen is you write one check. The attorney takes that check, and it's for cumulative for all the things, and then he's going to cut a little smaller check to the credit reporting company. He's going to cut a smaller check to the title company. He's going to send a check to the appraiser. He's going to send a check to the origination company. So all the different parties that are involved should get individual checks, but the attorney should be cutting individual checks for that, and typically as a consumer, you're going to come in and cut the one lump sum check that then gets subdivided out to everybody else.
Is it, refresh my recollection, Randy McMullen from Amstar Mortgage. You know, I know that if somebody comes to my home to sell aluminum siding, mm-hmm. and I sign a deal, I have like a 3-day right of rescission.
Yes.
Is it also true in your business? Is there a 3-day right of rescission after all this at the closing? I still have another 3 days?
You have 3 days. In fact, when a loan closes, and this is assuming a loan closes on a Monday, there is a rescission period Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then the loan actually becomes a loan or funds, as we say in the industry, on Friday. So there's always a 3-day period whereby during a refinance, if for some reason things didn't turn out right or you just, you know, weren't what you expected, you can rescind that loan and you're out clean.
Have you ever had it happen?
I've never had anybody rescind a loan. But basically
amazing.
Because, you know, when they show up to closing, our numbers are right on target with what they expect. We're a little different than most of the other lenders out there, and it's a competitive, very competitive industry. So everybody's trying to gain an edge. And what you'll see a lot of people do is kind of play a little bit of the games with some of the numbers. And the place that they play games the most with, unfortunately, are in your tax and your insurance escrows. So to make their quote look more, you know, more attractive so that you're bringing less money to closing, they're going to lowball the taxes that you're going to need at closing, or they're going to lowball the amount of insurance so that when their total number you bring to closing looks better. Unfortunately, when you get to closing, the taxes and the escrows are going to be what they're going to be. There's no control over that. It's based on the house and how much the taxes are. So a lot of people will get surprised with an escrow that's significantly larger than they expect.
You know, I had this happen many years ago. We were moving from Houston to L.A. I can't tell you how many years ago this was. We were moving from Houston to L.A., and we got estimates from moving companies to move our stuff. And they were all different, the estimates. And this one lady, she was the last one, and her estimate was not the lowest. But she said to me, she said, you need to understand something. This is all subject to federal law, and depending on how much your furniture weighs. This was many years ago, and I think it's different now. She said, so people can give you whatever estimate they want to give you. The, by law, the price is going to be what it is, by law. And as she opened up our eyes, we didn't realize that. I ended up using her because, not just because she was the last one, which I think gave her a, you know, kind of a superior position, but also because she explained to us.
Education.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Once you have knowledge, you know, that's the third thing what we try to do is our expertise and our knowledge to educate people up front for what they're going to need. And, you know, the reality is this. Escrows are going to be the exact same regardless of who you use. They're not going to be any different at all. It's based on how much the taxes are and when the taxes are due. And you can't manipulate those numbers. They're going to be set. So that's where I will tell people, look, we're going to give you a realistic number. This is a number that we think is a good number that you're going to have. It's not going to be a lowball number. It's going to be what we think is the most accurate number based on the information that we have today. And again, that's just kind of important in building that trust. And I think it also is important as a professional to give people as accurate information as you can.
I'm going to ask you, Randy McMullen, a question I love to ask people. In your industry also, and then just in the real estate industry, and that's about the housing bubble that we had, you know, the horrible crash that we had 2008, mm-hmm. 2009, 10, 11, whatever it was, and whatever you want to call it, you know, the mortgage bust, the housing bubble. Can you maybe enlighten us about that? I'd like your opinion. Where does the, if there's a, the word blame, if it's the appropriate word to use, where does the blame lie?
Who's responsible for that? That's a good question. You know, unfortunately, and this is going to sound a little maybe motivated from a different source, but when all of it hit the fan, so to speak, mortgage brokers really were blamed in large part for doing all these bad loans that went bad and putting people in all these really, really bad loans that, you know, we didn't check credit, we didn't check income, we didn't check their assets. We did stated income, stated asset, no income, no asset. And, you know, we were doing 100% loans with no income, no asset verifications for scores as low as 580.
No skin in the game.
Nothing. You didn't have to put anything down. You didn't need good credit. You just, you know, you're qualified. Basically, everybody was pretty much qualified for a home.
Drive-by appraisal or no or virtual?
They want the collateral to appraise. So you did have to get an appraisal. And the appraisals were not the big issue. The problem was who was actually making these programs, who developed the underwriting guidelines, and who was underwriting them to make the decisions on the loan. Mortgage brokers like myself who take loans to multiple companies, I will tell you, I don't know of a mortgage broker anywhere in the United States that ever wrote an underwriting guideline. In other words, we didn't make up the guidelines. The banks came up with the guidelines and brokers would follow those guidelines. So we would do those loans for the different banks. So, you know, there are a lot of things involved, but in terms of just how did so many people get in so many bad loans, there were some political incentives to get more people in housings. And, you know, the refinance boom had kind of slowed down. Banks were looking for ways to keep their bottom line improving. So if all of a sudden my competitors got a loan that they can do a stated income, stated asset with a 760, we'll go out and do it with the 720. And then the next bank says, well, then we'll go out and do it at 700. And then the next bank goes out, we'll do it at 680. So they kept lowering and lowering and lowering the criteria. And so basically, you know, I would say that the banks that wrote the guidelines and the banks that underwrote those loans and approved those loans, that's where all the problems came from.
Even 580, I think you said.
Down to 580 for 100% financing.
Unbelievable.
It was unbelievable.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're up against a break again, Randy McMullen. I want to ask you a little bit more about the mortgage crisis that we had here in this country, that I think we're over to largely, but I want to ask you if you foresaw it, if you could see it coming back when it happened. Like, a lot of people say they did. Some people say they had no idea, and all of a sudden it just, you know, crashed or whatever. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. Folks, you're listening to Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen of Amstar Mortgage. We'll be right back.
And now back to Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen of Amstar Mortgage Network. Visit AmstarLoans.com.
This is Jeff Davis with our host, Randy McMullen from Amstar Mortgage. Randy, boy, I remember it was back in 1987, 88, during the Reagan years. There was a crash of the stock market in October of that year, I believe it was. I guess that's October of 1987. It seemed like it just kind of hit us all of a sudden at once. But I don't know anybody in the financial industry who didn't claim that they knew it was coming and didn't claim that they didn't lose a dime. They all said, I didn't lose any money because I knew it was coming and I did this. Somebody lost a heck of a lot of money.
A lot of people did.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you the same question about the mortgage bust, which I'll call it, that happened back around 2008, continued into 2009, 10, and 11. Did Randy McMullen see it coming?
You know, when I saw some of the guidelines getting down below 680 for high loan-to-value loans, people that weren't really putting any or much money down, I was pretty surprised. And then I guess at a point in time when I had a client call me that had a 585 and wanted to do 100% financing, and I found out that he actually could get a loan, and I loaned at a really good rate. My first mortgage was 13.5%. This guy was putting no money down, a low credit score, and getting a rate of probably 7.5. So, you know, I saw some things that didn't make good sense to me. But to be honest, did I see how it would cascade into the numbers of defaults, which would then lead into depreciating home prices? I really can't say that I saw that whole thing coming, to be honest with you.
No, it's interesting, though, Randy, how impactful the mortgage industry and the real estate industry is to our economy in general, because it affected everything.
It affects, you know? It does, because you're affecting painters, carpenters, home builders, real estate agents.
We went into
people.
I think a depression, but I guess by the definition of depression, we didn't really have a depression, but I think it led to the recession anyway.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, the decline in home values meant that people have been using their homes as piggy banks. And when your value went down, you lost your piggy bank. And in fact, a lot of people that had a home equity line of credit for $100,000, you know, when they paid their balance down to $40,000, they got a call from the bank that says, hey, your line of credit's just been reduced to $40,000. So your spending capacity has gone down, which at the same time hurt their credit score by reducing their line of credit as well. So there are a lot of things that kind of went into the play. I think there are some other financial factors. But when the real estate market goes down, it brings the economy down with it.
Hmm. The credit that you're talking about, the situations, you know, you said the 580 and the 620, and these sound like awfully low numbers. When somebody comes to your office, let's suppose they call you over the phone. Let's suppose that you end up meeting with them.
Okay.
And there's no obligation to them to meet with you, right?
None at all.
No. Okay. And you may end up doing a bunch of work kind of up front here, and you don't really know exactly what their credit is, do you? Or can you look it up? Can you say to them, give me your social security number, I want to go do a credit check on you and see what your score is before I really get into this thing?
It's really interesting. The credit is going to be one of the determining factors of a loan. When we talk to people, the first thing that we ask is, do you have any idea what your credit score is? Some people do. A lot of people say, oh, I've got credits in the, you know, it's in this high 700s, or I've got a credit score around 700, or some people will say, look, I know it's around 660 to 680. So we know that's a factor going in. We have to know what their score is, because depending on your score, that's going to have a direct influence on what program we're going to recommend for you. Because some, with Fannie Mae, for example, at 740, you're going to get the best rates available. If you get on 720, there's an add-on. 700, there's another add-on. 680, there's another add-on. By the time you do all those add-ons and you start looking at it, you go, you know, maybe I can go to FHA because FHA doesn't have any add-ons for interest rate. So we do ask people about the credit up front. Now, there's another reason why we do that as well. I'm working with a client right now that has a 615 credit score. And the program that they want to get...
Very low.
It's pretty low credit score. The program that they want to get, you know, and they've been told they need a 680 to 700 score to get a loan these days. Well, the program that we can get them, we have a lender that will go do an FHA loan with a 720. So for this client, we absolutely said, you know what? Let's take a look at your credit. Let's see what's going on and see if there's anything that we can do that would improve your credit score by 5 points. We've got a really neat little program that I can run. Once I pull your credit, there's two different programs I can run. One's called What If. I can go in and say, well, what if your credit card balance was this? And what if we took this and paid it off? And what if we took this out? And we can see what impact that has on your credit score.
You mean you can go to a computer and kind of
go right to your computer.
Plug this in, take this out.
Yep, and it tells us exactly what impact it'll have. There's a really neat program that I can go to the same different software. I go to the computer and I say, look, here's their credit score. Here's their background. They have $4,000. What's the most increase we can get in their credit score for $4,000? The computer sorts through thousands of scenarios, and it spits out a program that says, pay this account down 300, pay this account down by 600, pay that account down by 800, and you'll get a 20-point increase or whatever. Really neat program. Now, that helps us save customers thousands of dollars sometimes by getting their credit score from a 708 up to a 738 or 745 just for a very little amount of money.
People don't exaggerate their credit score. You find, you said they're usually pretty honest to the extent that they know what it is.
But I think for the most part these days, it's changed so much that people will tell you honestly, this is what they think their credit score is because they know that it's going to impact them. And we tell them, we need to know your credit score. So in some cases, we'll send people a blank loan application and say, look, fill out the basic information on the loan application. And we'll pull your credit, and then once we pull that, we're going to send you a copy of your credit report. I'm going to make notes on it so you can see everything that's on there, and then if it's necessary, I'm going to run one of these scenarios to tell you how to make it better.
But you don't seem like a very judgmental guy. So if somebody comes in with a credit score of 620 or whatever that fella had, I don't see Randy McMullen being the kind of guy who's going to say, "Geez, you know, what a loser."
You know, our job is to help.
People worry about that.
Yeah, our job is, look, everybody has a situation, and some things just happen that are beyond your control. Unfortunately, one of the things that we see is a result of divorces, where one spouse determines that they're going to start paying things late intentionally to impact the other person's credit. There's nothing you can do about that. There are a lot of things that show up on your credit that you don't even know show up on your credit. So you may have a low credit score due to some things that are outside of your control. You know, our job is to get you the best rate, the best program, make it the easiest as we can possibly make it. So no matter what your score, we're going to get you the best loan possible. So, you know, honestly, doing some of the more challenging loans, there's a little more sense of satisfaction when you get to the closing because you've helped somebody basically maybe save $3,000 or $4,000, and in some cases, you're helping somebody get a loan who's been told no one or two or three other places, and they're extremely grateful. We're glad to make it happen, and those are the most rewarding ones.
Randy, in last week's show, folks, we're talking with Randy McMullen, the host of Keeping It Real here on News Talk 1160. Randy McMullen from Amstar Mortgage. We had a great guest last week, a fellow named Drew Peterson out of Denver.
Great guy.
And an expert in credit.
Yes.
You know, just an expert in repairing credit and so forth. And it opened my eyes. I thought I know a lot about this stuff. One of the things that I didn't realize, and maybe you encounter this in your practice, Randy McMullen at Amstar, is that I thought, you know, if I don't have any credit card debt, that's good. You know, mm-hmm. You know, I can say if you asked me, you know, how's your credit? I'd say it's great because I don't owe anybody anything. You know, I have a mortgage, you know,
right,
at a very low rate. It's a very reasonable amount of money to be able to handle every month. Other than that, I don't owe anybody anything. And according to Drew, and I don't want to quote, but maybe you can kind of corroborate this. According to Drew, that's not good. Not from the credit standpoint.
You know, even if you've got 5 credit cards, which you've got 0 balances, if you don't use a credit card for about 6 months, that card has no impact on your score. It's kind of like just moved out of the equation because you're not using it. So we tell people sometimes, you know what, if you got a card, you just put a tank of gas on it every 3 or 4 months and use it and pay it. You know, I had a client a couple of years ago, and I remember that she had a credit score of 674, and to get the program that she needed, we needed a 680. She needed 6 points. So we ran the what if module on her credit. We paid her credit card balance down to zero. When we did, it lowered her credit score by 7 points.
Hmm.
So we paid it off completely, and it lowered her credit score. We took the same credit card, paid it down to $50, and it increased her score by 11 points. So some of the things in credit, they're a little counterintuitive, but you want to use your credit cards a little bit on an occasional basis. One of the things that is determining in your credit score is called debt to credit. And if your credit card has a limit of $5,000 and you're using $4,999, you're using almost 100%, you're going to get a pretty big hit on your credit score. You might see your score dropped by as much as 60 to 70 points. If you get below 75% usage, it goes up. If you get below 50%, you're going to get an increase of that points back. So sometimes what we do is we go to people and look at their credit cards and say, look, you're at 57% on this one and 62% on this one and 51%. Let's just get all those below 50, and then that'll bump your credit score up.
These are great things you can do for people.
It's a lot of fun. Actually, it is. Very rewarding.
You know, Randy, we're up against another break. This time is flying by, I got to tell you. When we come back, though, I'm going to tease you again now with a question before we go to the break that I want you to answer when we come back from the break. And perhaps it's a bit more controversial.
Okay.
So I see sweat already starting to pour down your brow.
Yeah.
And that is the situation where, because it happens all the time, the buyer, okay, is referred a mortgage company by the realtor.
Yes.
The realtor says, you know, in essence, I want you to use this person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask you your opinion of that. I know you deal with a lot of realtors.
Yes.
Okay, but I'm going to ask you your opinion about that and whether you recommend that people go that route. When we come back, folks, you're listening to Keeping It Real with our host, Randy McMullen of Amstar Mortgage. Stay with us.
And now, back to Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen of Amstar Mortgage Network. Visit AmstarLoans.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with our host, Randy McMullen from Amstar Mortgage. Randy, I kind of teased you with this question before the break. I'm going to ask it again and maybe put you in kind of an uncomfortable position from time to time, and that is when the realtor recommends, I'm putting the word recommends in quotes, to the buyer of the home that they use a particular mortgage company and a particular mortgage person. Because I know you deal with a lot of realtors, Randy, but you also deal with a lot of people directly, not through a realtor.
Exactly.
So you do a lot of refis, you know, which probably isn't through a realtor, but you also do a lot of purchase money mortgages. And I want you to answer that question. What do you advise in that particular regard?
That's a great question, Jeff. And, you know, we get even some of our purchases are referred to us by past clients. I've got a lot of clients that I've worked with loans at Coca-Cola and Delta and the CDC, and you know they're looking for homes, and they're going to get they actually call us when they're talking to the realtor at the same time, so they're doing it both at the same time. Now the question you ask is, what about a realtor referral? And when a realtor refers a mortgage company to you, what should a consumer think about that? And it's a fair question. I'd like to think that the realtors that are using me to work with their clients are recommending me because of our knowledge, our expertise, the service levels that we provide, and you know, just knowing the confidence and know that we're going to get the transaction closed on time and we're going to get a great deal for the customer. So you know, let's back up and look at it from a different perspective. Why would a realtor refer one particular lender over another? And there are a few good reasons for that. It might be that you know, their sons play on the soccer team together. That's not the best reason in the world to recommend somebody, but we know that that happens. I think today you're going to find that most realtors are going to recommend a mortgage person because they've had a good experience with them in the past, and they feel confident that that person can get their loan closed. Now, I'm going to be very candid, and I think this may ruffle some feathers at some times, but I think for a lot of realtors, they may not know or care that the person they're recommending has the best rates. They just want to make sure that the customer gets a competitive rate and that loan is going to get closed on time. So it's, as a consumer, I think it's prudent and it's wise to get a couple of quotes. You don't want to get just one number. I think you want to get at least a couple of quotes, but at the same time, you absolutely want to get somebody that you feel comfortable with, that you want to deal with, that you think is going to get your loan closed on time and can answer all the questions for you. And I think for a lot of people, the service level is important. If the difference comes down to, $100 or $200 in closing costs, but, here I'm going to deal with a bank where I can either call them between 9 and 5 or I won't get an answer, or I can call somebody else that's going to be much more available. I think a lot of people are going to say, even if it's $100 extra, I want to be able to get my questions answered. I'm comfortable. I know it's going to get done. So I think that's part of the decision. But I would say certainly I would look at your realtor's recommendation, and then I might consider one other.
I want to ask a question now about Amstar Mortgage specifically, okay? Because I hear on the radio from time to time, and maybe I see it on TV, I don't know, it's in the newspaper, online, whatever it is, a mortgage company advertising, we specialize in hard-to-approve folks. And I want to ask you about Amstar Mortgage, which is your company. You're the head of the company. You've been in the business a long time. Do you feel you can look people in the eye and say to them, we can help people who have special needs, I'm going to use that term, just as well as the next company and perhaps even better?
I would say in most cases, we can probably help most people better, but there's a caveat. You cannot have every program known to mankind. So what we've done is we've kind of narrowed our focus to say, look, I can't serve 100% of the market, but I can serve 95 or 96% of the market and be very knowledgeable about those programs. We have a lender that will actually do an FHA loan all the way down to 580 right now. We have conventional lenders that will go down to about 640 right now. So we're going to be able to, with that range, we're going to be able to do most of the loans that can get done in today's environment. Now, there are also what they call portfolio lenders out there. A portfolio lender is a lender that says, we're going to loan our own money. We don't follow Fannie Mae. We don't follow Freddie Mac. And we don't follow FHA. We're just going to look at it. And, if you put $1 million in their bank and you need a loan, they're probably going to make some flexible guidelines for you because they want your money in their bank. That is not really especially that a mortgage broker is going to do. If somebody says we can do tough loans, I would say that we do those. If someone contacts us early, I always tell people, call us as soon as you think you might be interested in a house, and let's talk to you about what that process is. And I've got people that I've been working with literally 12 months in advance to get
a home. That's wonderful, because I know there are a lot of people in your business who don't want to mess with people like that, since they don't feel like it's worth it to them to do that. Do you find people sometimes, and this has got to feel good if it happens, that they're pleasantly surprised? They come in very pessimistic, thinking, all right, Randy, when I tell you our situation here, you're probably going to say there's no way you can help me, but I thought I'd ask anyway just for the heck of it. Do you find that there are people who turn out to be pleasantly surprised that you can, in fact, get them their loan and get them into that house?
Yeah, again, those are probably some of the most rewarding ones. We have a lender that offers a portfolio product, and that says that, if you've had a bankruptcy or foreclosure, they can literally 2 months after that, they can get you a loan.
Wow.
Now, there are certain parameters that have to be met for that, and each program is a little bit different. But when those people come to us because they've been told, we have to wait 3 years or we have to wait for a conventional 7 years, and I can tell them, hey, we can get you a loan in 60 days. That gets their attention. And that surprises a lot of people. And then they're like, give us the details. We want to know what we got to do to get there. And that's one of the clients I'm working with right now is they're just, working for a couple more months to get their down payment together. And then they're ready to, get a new house because they had a foreclosure and they're ready to get into another one.
All right, unfortunately, we're almost out of time. I want to ask you one more question.
Okay.
Randy McMullen, because doubtless over the many years you've been in this business, you've got a million stories that you could tell us about, people that you've worked with, of running the entire gamut, I'm sure. But I want you to give us a real quick forecast, if you would please.
Okay.
And by the way, a lot of these questions, you don't have the question in advance. I want our audience to know that. I'm throwing these at you. I want you to please give us a real quick forecast for the year 2014. I heard you talking to our operations manager, Sharon Ashmore, about, you know, the ratio, the percentage of purchase money mortgages compared to refis for 2014. Tell our audience what you think, Randy.
The forecast for the year is that overall in the originations and mortgage business, the industry will be down 32%. That's a pretty big decline for a one-year decline. Purchases, on the other hand, they're probably going to stay at about par. It won't be a bad year, just going to be a little bit of a down year for the mortgage industry.
Oh. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen from Amstar Mortgage. Randy, you guys are amazing.
Thanks, Jeff.
Folks, visit amstarloans.com, amstarloans.com, or feel free to call them at 770-509-7827, 770-509-7827. Randy McMullen, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jeff.
This has been Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen, brought to you by Amstar Mortgage Network, NMLS number 148016. Come back next week as Randy McMullen interviews the people important to you for getting a mortgage and preparing to buy or sell a home. For more information, visit AmstarLoans.com and tune in each Friday at noon for Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.